Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into The Aftermath. Today's episode will consist of the entire interview with Dr. Helen Bond, who's the professor and director at the Center for the Study of Christian Origins at the University of Edinburgh. And she has some very interesting things about Jesus Christ as a historical figure and who's to blame for his crucifixion. Stay tuned after because I'll be talking with Chris and Amanda, and what she has to say might change our verdict. Thank you so much for speaking to us, Dr. Bond. So we're trying to get down to the bottom of who's to blame for the death of Jesus Christ. Not an easy feat, but here we are. Could you talk us through what the political landscape was in Jerusalem at the time of Jesus's death?
Well, a really complex situation, actually, because Jerusalem at the time was under Roman occupation. It was under direct Roman rule, and it had been under direct Roman rule for about 25 years. So it was still a fairly sort of uneasy alliance between the Romans, who are in charge, and the Jewish aristocracy, the chief priests, who more or less kind of ruled the place on a day-to-day basis. So Pilate actually didn't live in Jerusalem. He lived quite a long way out on the coast. But he came to Jerusalem at festival time. So he comes to Jerusalem because it's the Passover, with a body of troops, because he's expecting that there may well be trouble, because it's a politically and sort of religiously, nationally sort of very heightened time. There's loads and loads of people all converging on Jerusalem. They're all drinking too much. It's sort of a holiday. They're all celebrating liberation from slavery in Egypt. And yet, sort of hugely ironically, you've got the Roman occupation there. You've got Roman troops making a big thing of the Roman presence wherever they go. So it's politically very volatile, and you've got just so many people in such a small, tiny, walled city that it's just a kind of a powder keg waiting to go off. So Pilate's there with his troops. Meanwhile, the chief priests and the sort of priestly aristocracy are trying to maintain law and order on a sort of day-to-day basis. But they're also massively busy because of it being the Passover festival. And they're in the temple sort of meeting together, killing the Passover lambs, the whole kind of mechanism that goes with the Passover festival. So it's really busy, loads of people there, and just, you know, it very, very volatile. It just needs the slightest spark for the whole place to just explode.
So how much of a threat was Jesus's presence to the Romans and to Pilate?
Well, I think it was quite a big threat. I mean, people tend to think, oh, well, Jesus was a pacifist, so, you know, why on earth would Rome want to get rid of him? But the thing is, if you go to Jerusalem at Passover, where things are as kind of, you know, critical as I've just said, then anybody who turns up who's talking about a kingdom, I mean, he's talking about a different kingdom, not the kingdom of Rome, the emperor, but he's talking about the kingdom of God. So this is an alternative kingdom. And worse than that, he's got a following. He's got people, a group of men, a group of women as well, a sort of a whole crowd of people who've come down with him from Galilee. He's getting more people in Jerusalem. People are sort of hanging on his every word. And as if that wasn't bad enough, he's ridden into Jerusalem on a donkey. This is a pilgrimage festival. You know, everybody walks in. When it's a pilgrimage thing, you walk in or you go in on your knees. You don't ride an animal. So Jesus is clearly saying, you know, look at me. I'm somebody here. And then he goes into the temple and he causes some disruption there. So, I mean, clearly he is a very dangerous person. And I don't think it's at all strange that Pilate's keeping an eye on him.
So I've read a lot about how Pontius Pilate was a ruthless ruler. Is there truth to that? And can you speak to his particular style of ruling?
Yeah. I mean, it's strange because the Gospels give the impression that he's sort of pushed into crucifying Jesus, as if he sort of doesn't really want to do that. But the Gospels have their own reasons for doing that, because they want to put as much blame as possible on the Jewish authorities. And when you read other sources, particularly Jewish authorities about Pilate, they're really, really negative. There's a guy called Josephus, a first century historian, and he was born just a little bit after Pilate, but he would have had good sources. And he says that he was pretty insensitive. He was, you know, expected to be boss in his own province. But the worst character assassination comes from a guy called Philo, who lived in Alexandria. And he was a direct contemporary of Pilate. And he gives a great long list of atrocities that Pilate got involved with. He says he was cruel, he was greedy, he sent people to death without any trial, and all kinds of lists of things. And he says he was a spiteful and angry person as well, as if all the rest wasn't bad enough. I mean, again, you have to be a little bit cautious and treat them with a pinch of salt. And, you know, they also have their reasons for being very negative about Pilate. But I'm sure, actually, that the truth is somewhere in between. And I don't think you get to be prefect of a Roman province if you're not pretty harsh and ruthless. I mean, he would have had some kind of background in the military. He would have been an alpha male who knew what he was doing, expected to be boss, probably very little time for the religious sensitivities of the people he's sent to govern. And I doubt he would have paid very much attention to Jesus at all. I mean, he'd have just heard, this is a troublemaker. He's got a following. He's doing things in Jerusalem we don't like. Let's get rid of him. Because Pilate's main reason for being in Jerusalem is to maintain law and order. So, I mean, the whole point of what he's there for is to get rid of people like Jesus.
Do you believe that Pilate would have hesitated in sentencing Jesus to death, as is depicted in the gospel?
No, I don't think that's very likely to be true. I mean, of course, the gospel writers are all writing a long time after the death of Jesus anyway, at least 40 years, possibly 60, 70 years later. I doubt they know very much about the actual trial itself anyway. Someone like Pilate wouldn't have spent much time thinking about Jesus. I mean, Jesus is a provincial. He's a really, on the social scale, he's very, very low. He's not a Roman citizen. If you're a Roman citizen, then there's a whole kind of legal machinery that sort of comes into bearing. But if you're a provincial, you're sort of under the law. And I mean, it's hard for us to imagine just how cheaply the Roman state regarded most lives, particularly lives of people like Jesus. Pilate would have snuffed him out in a second if he thought that he was causing trouble. You know, he may hardly have needed to see him at all, just heard what he was up to and sent him to the cross.
So we're curious a little bit about Judas. So other than what's in the New Testament, what do we know about Judas the disciple?
Nothing at all. I think that's actually why Judas is so fascinating. We know absolutely nothing. And I mean, and just that very fact has meant that for 2,000 years, people have speculated. So There's all kinds of stories about him. Did he do it for the money? Was he possessed by Satan? Was he hoping that Jesus was going to be a sort of political messiah in some way? Did he get disillusioned? Did the chief priests get to him somehow? There's a suggestion that his name Iscariot means man from Keriot, and Keriot may have been in the south rather than in Galilee, in which case he was perhaps a bit of a loner, not one of the 12, not one of the guys. Maybe the chief priests somehow could get to his family. Or at the opposite end of the scale, maybe he was working with Jesus. Maybe Jesus sort of put him up to it because, of course, Jesus knows that he's got to die. That's part of the plan. And in a way, if Judas hadn't done what he did, you've got to get some way of getting Jesus to the cross. So people have speculated wildly on Judas, but in the end, we know absolutely nothing.
I'm fascinated by that thought that he was a bit of a, he didn't really, wasn't part of the crew as much as he wanted to be.
Yeah, I kind of like that one too. I mean, it's very flimsy because we don't know where Judas came from at all. But it's kind of conceivable that if the chief priests wanted to get to one of Jesus's disciples, they would look for the one who was perhaps a little bit on the outskirts, the one who didn't quite get in with the other guys. And if they had some kind of hold over him, perhaps they could use that as leverage. But again, this is entirely in the realm of hypothesis and imagination. I mean, we just have nothing to back that up.
Gosh, I want more. I want more on him.
I know. Well, that's it. I think everyone wants more on Judas. So we all keep on kind of going, adding extra layers to his story.
So I've read that it's hard to know exactly how his last days went down because, again, it was the New Testament was written to appeal to the Romans in an attempt to convert them, and therefore making the Jews the scapegoat in the killing of Jesus. Do you think this is true? Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the problem. The Gospels are written quite a long time after the events that they're describing. And at the time, that they're writing at a time when most of the new converts to Christianity are coming from the Roman world. And Romans hear the story about Jesus and, the teaching, and they say, yeah, I like that, sounds good. And then they hear, oh, by the way, he was put to death by a Roman and he was crucified. And that's not what they want to hear. That's just terrible. How can you believe in somebody who was put to death as a rebel against the Roman state? And so the way that the gospel writers deal with that is that they say, yes, okay, he was executed, he was crucified, but Pilate didn't want to do it. Pilate was pushed into it by the Jewish authorities. And it just so happens that at the same time that the Christian message was appealing to Romans, they were also burning a lot of their bridges with Jews because the sort of parting of the ways between the two religions, between Judaism and Christianity, was going on at about this time. Jews were expelling Christians from synagogues, and it became clear that they were two different things. So it suited the gospel writer's purposes to make Pilate into the good guy who didn't want to kill Jesus, and at the same time to say, oh yeah, well, it was the Jews actually who pushed him into it because they there was no love lost between them and the Jewish authorities. And the problem is, that's all well and good at the end of the first century when Christianity is a very small minority. But when those texts are heard centuries later in very different contexts, they then kind of perpetuate that idea that it was the Jewish authorities who pushed Pilate into doing something that he didn't want to do. But I'm sure there's no historical value to that.
Yeah, context is everything, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what that's a real problem when people read the Gospels. And on one level, of course, they do have a timeless message, but they're also human creations written in very specific historical contexts. And if you don't pay attention to that, then you can actually go really far wrong.
So finally, Dr. Bond, in your opinion, and I know this is going to be a tough thing to answer, but who do you think is to blame for the death of Jesus Christ?
Oh, well, can I say God? I mean, on one, it depends. I guess that the historical answer is, well, I guess Pilate. But I mean, clearly Jesus was going to Jerusalem courting death. He, according to the Gospels, again, he knew exactly what was going to happen when he went to Jerusalem. And I think there's good reasons to suppose that he did. You know, you don't take a following to Jerusalem at Passover time and expect to get away with it. So Jesus himself was sort of courting his own death. I think Pilate sent him to the cross. But you could take a completely different view and put it all in a more theological reading and say, well, actually, if it was God's will and that was what God wanted to do, then that's ultimately where the blame lies.
Wow, fascinating. We might have to change our verdict. We're going to have to think about this. Well, thank you so, so much, Dr. Bond. It's been amazing talking to you and really learning about this, especially during this week where it has a lot of relevance.
Yeah, that's right. But a very strange week for most of us, I think.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Small details or big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
So I don't know about you, but I felt like I wanted her to be my new best friend.
I thought she was super cool. And, you know, I'm not really a religious person, but for some reason I went to Loyola Marymount University, which is a Jesuit school. And I was always so interested in my religion classes. It was like the history and the actual historical perspective on Christianity and a lot of different religions is so fascinating to me.
Well, it's like the fact that a book that is written has had such a massive effect on our culture, and the fact that, you know, some of it
is historically accurate and some of it isn't. It's almost like a historical fiction.
Well, that's how I felt too, growing up Catholic, was I felt like I was being sold something at every turn. Like I felt like it was all like I knew none of this could be real. I was like always curious why people were so intense about like making me believe in all this stuff. And so I now as an adult looking back on it from a historical perspective is so fascinating. Some of it obviously, like you're saying, is real, and some of it is more fictionalized or sort of more storytelling to get you engaged in the morals and ethics and stuff.
And you almost feel like a detective when you're trying to sort out the what's real and what's not and trying to piece together from, I mean, you must feel like this a lot, Rebecca, when you're doing your research. You're getting your little bits of information from people, different people's perspectives, and you're kind of trying to figure out what really happened. I guess that's history.
That is. That's all it is. And I thought that what she said about Pontius Pilate, like who he really was, being somewhere in between. So it's like you can't believe all the really awesome things you hear, and you can't believe all the terrible, terrible things you hear, because the worse it is on the spectrum, like the more the people who are saying those things have to gain or lose. So they're not as valuable, you know, sources when it comes to like historical figures, especially in the Bible. So,
and just to sort of add a little whatever, I don't know what you would call this color, to this particular historical event, the thing is, the truth about this particular historical event is actually doctrine now. Like, that's not the case in most any other historical events, I guess, with the exception of maybe a creating of constitutions of different countries and stuff. I guess those historical events become doctrine, but this becomes doctrine, principles, and things people believe in. So it's just, it's fascinating thinking about it from historical perspective, spiritual perspective, and hearing the guest Dr. Bond say ultimately could take the position that it's God is to blame for the death of Christ because he is all powerful and this was his plan.
And I have to say, hearing her say that made me think we let God off the hook a little too early, I think.
Well, don't we always?
Did her conversation make you rethink the verdict at all, Rebecca?
I mean, I think ultimately she agreed that Pilate was really the one who ordered his execution, and had he not, he wouldn't have been crucified. So I do think that Pilate holds a lot of weight. But I think that God could have gotten the big slap instead of Judas.
Right. That's where I was going to go, too. I think Judas getting the slap is the thing I most rethought, because she went on to tell us basically we don't know anything about Judas, so we made up all this stuff basically from a historical perspective. She's like, yeah, we don't know about anything about Judas. That might be why we came up with him being like this duplicitous figure.
And the idea that he might have been just like on the outskirts of the crew, just like not as cool as the other bunch, and that's what, you know, that's why he was vulnerable to you know, the bribes.
But again, that's what she was saying was total speculation.
It is total speculation.
Yeah, but the kind of, you know, when we step into doing this episode, we're accepting this sort of biblical idea of the crucifixion and what went on in a way, because otherwise there would just be the whole story is all laid out for us in the Bible, and we have impressions of it that we can't, probably inherent biases from our upbringing and our education about what happened that would be difficult for us to shake. And so that's why I do think if we're going to blame Judas, accepting Judas as we think of him from the scriptures, then we can't let God off the hook, because who's sort of laying out Judas's actions in front of him? It's God, no, right?
I think you're right. I think we need to get a little warm towel and put it on Judas's cheek and ask for forgiveness. And I think God, I'm so sorry. I can't imagine just like going up to God and slapping him. But in this particular situation, I think it might be well deserved. I don't know.
I mean, look, I think if we accept that, if we accept that God is all-knowing, all-powerful, the death of Christ would is actually a good thing. If we accept also that God, the God we're talking about, is a good God, right? So in that case, I don't think he deserves a slap for carrying out a plan that is ultimately good and true and like
to save our souls.
Like, right. I mean, either we approach it from, I think, a just like history perspective of like the actual events, and in which case I still think we got it right in terms of Pilate, but or we go from a total determinist like God perspective, and then we blame God and we put him in jail because he's just carrying out his or her great plan.
Imagine God in jail.
I've always thought of God as a little kid, and even today when I think of God, I think of the genie from Aladdin.
Really?
I think of God as a genie, and in my mind Jesus is Peter Pan.
What?
Why are they all Disney characters?
I don't know. That's just how I've always thought of it. When I would go to church as a little kid, I would imagine they'd say, Jesus is here right now. You know, he's here with us. And I would just imagine Peter Pan on the rafters, like hopping around and flying around the church.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
That's so cool. Now I wish I had known that when I was a kid, because it would have made church more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think this might be a situation, you guys, where we have to put it out to the alarmy.
Oh, my God.
That's going to be dangerous, Amanda. That's going to be dangerous. Because the alarmy isn't just the alarmy, you know. They're also, like, people in the world with beliefs.
I know, but this is why I think we need to say, we're rethinking the big slap. Who do you think should have gotten it, Judas or God?
Well, look, you're you're right. We've never had the big slap, had our alarmy really weigh in on the big slap before. So maybe this is the time. It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
I think let's think about it. Let's not do anything rash. Okay. Because Judas, even though we're feeling bad for Judas and we know nothing about him historically, he was kind of a little weasel in the Bible. So
maybe I take back that warm cloth.
Well,
I'm holding a warm cloth in my hand. Do I?
Okay. No, this is what we do with the cloth. He still got the slap, but we're going to wash his feet.
Can I make a pitch? Can I make a pitch to also, okay, so who gets the big slap? Judas, God. But I also want to throw another one in there, which is Jesus himself. Because
that is what she said.
I do think that what she said was interesting, especially about Jesus entering into Jerusalem on the big animal. What was he riding?
A donkey.
A donkey.
Yeah.
And like everyone else, it was because we all know that guy who pulls up to Paramount Studios in the walk-on side, but he's got his car and he's like, what do you mean I can't park here? Like, that's kind of what I pictured. Like, you're supposed to walk in, like just walk in like everybody else. So he came in and he kind of knew he was going to have a target on his back, and he kind of fed
flipping into that. He was flipping tables, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Flipping tables. Exactly.
He was.
Yeah, he was acting like a Real Housewife.
The Real Housewives of the Real House Preachers of Jerusalem.
Yeah. I would have loved to see that reality
that
show.
Be good.
Oh,
so I think really the only thing to do is do a poll.
Okay,
set it out to the alarmy. You guys follow us on Instagram and Facebook to participate, or leave a voicemail for crying out loud.
Yes, and again, you can also do a voice memo that you email to us. Now, it's important that you go on your phone right now or on your computer, wherever you might be, and that you rate, review, and subscribe. Now, it's more important than ever. We know that you're home, hopefully, and being safe, or maybe you are one of the essential workers out there and you're listening to us while you work. That would be an honor. Thank you so much for your service. But it's important that we get these reviews and ratings, because somehow that's what puts us up on the charts. And or so I've been told by Amanda every day. She texts me. She says, Rebecca, we need to get
more. I said, the show's going to get canceled if we don't
Exactly.
Let's say we're going to get to 800 reviews by next episode. We're at 765 right now. And let's see if we can all band together, the Alarmy, we're calling on you, to get us to 800 reviews. And if we get there, I don't know, maybe there'll be some sort of treat. I don't know what we'll give you, but there'll be something good.
It will be good. That would be amazing. So yeah, let's do that. And again, feel free to call us and leave us your thoughts. We're going to put out a poll after this episode airs, and we'll leave it on for a few days. And then we'll see what you guys think about who should actually get the big slap for the death of Jesus Christ.
And I have a review I want to read right now. So it says, Rebecca, you're a comedy. And then it cuts out because the title was too long. But they give us 5 stars. And this comes in from M. Deneuve. Love the podcast. Me encanta que haya representación Latinx en el mundo de podcast.
Wow. Thank you. She loves that there's Latinx representation in the world of podcasting. And Amanda, I must say, your Spanish was not bad.
I'm Southern California born and raised.
Well, thank you for your review. And feel free to leave us reviews in Spanish. I can read them. I can understand them. In fact, I'll read them out loud. So chime in by emailing us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. And you can also follow us on Instagram @thealarmistpodcast or on Twitter @alarmistthe. So this has been really insightful. Speaking to Dr. Helen Bond, please make sure to check out her book. She's got an awesome book called The Historical Jesus, A Guide for the Perplexed. And you can buy it on Amazon or wherever you buy books. It's widely distributed. So thank you, Dr. Helen Bond, for talking to us. And thanks, Amanda and Chris, for going on this journey with me.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Of course. It's the highlight of my weeks. My weeks and weeks and weeks.
Same. Tune in next week. We're going to be talking about the death of Marilyn Monroe.
Goodbye, Norma Jean. Though I never knew you. Fade out on this, Amanda. Knew you at all. I had the grace to hold yourself while those around you crawled.
Or just play the real one, Amanda.
You crawled out of the woodworks. And it whispered into your brain, it said, you are a turnip.
Is this your karaoke tune?
No.
It should be. You sound good.
And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle. Oh, brother.
Powered by ACAST.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.